Welcome to Today's Issues. I'm Christy Carson, and today we're speaking with Dr. Ramsey Hashem. He practices at Washington University School of Medicine, Barnes Jewish Hospital, Division of Pulmonary and Critical Care. He became the physician representative on Second Wind St. Louis's Board of Advisors in 2004. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Hashem.
Thank you for having me.
So we're going to be talking about the Second Wind Annual Lung Walk taking place on October 18th at Forest Park. But first, I wanted to talk to you to get a medical understanding about diseases related to this surgery and medical therapies and surgeries related to it. What are the primary causes of someone having to be required to receive a lung transplant?
In the United States today, the leading diagnosis requiring a lung transplant is pulmonary fibrosis or interstitial lung disease. That accounts for somewhere around 45 to up to 50% of lung transplants nationally. The second most common indication for lung transplant is COPD or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease and emphysema. The third diagnosis is cystic fibrosis or CF. And then the rest of people having a lung transplant consists of really all lung diseases that result in advanced lung disease and advanced respiratory impairment.
So if my research proves correct, the first lung transplant surgery took place in 1963. And although it was an historically significant medical milestone, the true testimony is how far we've come since then. So how far have we come, and what have been some of the most significant improvements since that time?
We've come a very long way from 1963. You're right, the first lung transplant done worldwide was in 1963 in Mississippi. That sparked a lot of interest, as you might imagine, in that treatment for people with lung disease. Unfortunately, over the next 20 years, not many transplants were done, and the outcomes were essentially uniformly disappointing, and I don't think a single recipient of a lung transplant in that time period lived more than a year. One of the biggest problems at the time was figuring out the best way to anastomose or hook up the airway from the recipient into the airway of the transplanted lung or the donor lung. There was a lot of research done in animal models of lung transplantation in the late 1970s and early 1980s that really helped figure out the best surgical technique for the transplant. And in the early 1980s, it was the procedure of a combined heart and lung transplant that really led to the resurgence of isolated lung transplant procedures. So since the early 1980s, I think the first successful human lung transplant or isolated human lung transplant was in 1983 in Toronto in Canada. Since then, lung transplantation has really enjoyed a lot of success, a lot of patient success stories, and we're still challenged in a number of ways. Probably biggest challenge that we face is donor organ availability. The biggest problem in terms of having a lung transplant, the biggest barrier to having a transplant. And among donors, only around 25% of organ donors are suitable lung donors because the lungs are very susceptible to injury that makes them unsuitable for a lung transplant. And so it's a small number or small proportion of organ donors that are suitable for lung transplantation.
So how are you addressing this issue and meeting the need of the patient that's requiring a transplant?
Yeah, that's a very good question. In other organ transplants, particularly in the kidney, one avenue to really expand the donor pool is what's called living organ or living donor kidney transplantation, where a living family member would donate a kidney to a family member that has kidney disease. That really has not been viable option in lung transplantation. So we have that additional obstacle in lung transplantation. One of the new research procedures that's come up is a procedure called ex vivo lung perfusion. And this is a machine where lungs from a donor that may not appear to be ideal for a lung transplant can be put on this machine and examined over a period of 4 hours or so to be sure or feel more comfortable that they're suitable for a transplant or suitable to use for a transplant. The device may also help in terms of improving some of the lung function. And so that's been an exciting addition in the field that's starting to take off to try to increase the number of potential lung organ donors.
So if we choose to be an organ donor, and specifically we would like to be a lung donor, do we have to specify that on any documentation or make that clear?
No, I would encourage everyone to think about this, and it's fairly easy in Missouri to register to be on the organ donor. You can do this online, and probably more importantly, it's important to think about this and talk about it with family members and friends, and if one decides to be an organ donor, to express that wish to their to their family. It's a difficult thing to think of in the sense that none of us like to think about dying, and so we tend to try to avoid that those discussions, but you know, it's very important to consider it, and that would really help people who are in need of organ transplants. And one does not have to specify which organs they would be willing to donate should they die.
So from 1963 till now, life expectancy has exponentially increased for people who undergo this surgery. I mean, in the beginning, life expectancy was barely a few months to a year, and now we have people living 7, 8, 9, 10 years out and more. That's significant.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Average survival today for lung transplant recipients is about 6 years. That has consistently improved over the last 20, 25 years. Honestly, an average survival of 6 years is still disappointing, and there's lots to learn and figure out to improve that outcome. And although the average expected survival is around 6 years, there are many patients who live much longer than that, 10 years, 15, and even 20 years. Unfortunately, those are few patients and the minority of lung transplant recipients today. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done to improve outcomes after transplantation.
So what is your leading preventative advice as it pertains to lung disease and preventing the need, if at all possible, to undergo a lung transplant?
The biggest modifiable risk factor is cigarette smoking. And what I mean by that is one can't control whether they have a genetic disease, such as cystic fibrosis.
Right.
Or pulmonary fibrosis, as I said, was the leading cause for lung transplants. In general, there's not a known cause for the pulmonary fibrosis. On the other hand, emphysema and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, it's typically caused by cigarette smoking. And so the number one modifiable risk factor is cigarette smoking. And my advice to everyone is not to smoke cigarettes. And for someone who is a smoker, to really try to stop smoking. Although that's very difficult, and it's much easier said than done.
Yeah.
I recognize that.
Dr. Hashem, thanks so much for joining us today. Next, we're going to talk to some lung donor recipients and family members about that day-to-day experience and the medical journey of being diagnosed with a lung disease and ultimately requiring that lung transplant. Is there anything you would like to add before we move on, Dr. Hashem?
Thanks for the opportunity. The only other plea that I would have is for people to come out to the Second Wind Lung Walk. That's a terrific event. Second Wind has been a fantastic organization. It's raised a lot of money to help support family members and patients with lung disease before a transplant, after a transplant. And the Lung Walk is really the main fundraiser annually for Second Wind. So I hope a lot of people come to the event this year and hope to see you there.
Very well said. And thanks again for joining us.